Welcome to the Relative Paths podcast. We are a podcast about web development, web design, and things of that nature. I am Mark Phoenix, your host.
And I'm Ben Hutchings, the other host.
This week we are talking about going limited. If you are a freelancer or a small agency, you're of course running a business. So there are a number of different options as to what business entity you can decide to be. And perhaps if you're a freelancer or you're a small operation, you might not have considered the possibility of setting up a limited company, but that's what we're going to be talking about today. And to help us talk about that, we are pleased to welcome back Mark Wilkinson. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Hello, everybody.
Now, Mark is a returning guest. Mark was with us on episode 29, where we were talking about WordPress plugin development, but he was also with us for this a kind of a ghost episode of this before, because we mentioned on episode 38 about mistakes that we recorded an episode with Mark, but we managed to stuff up the recording
completely.
We've got multiple listening devices sort of ready to try and record this. We've even spoken to our friends at GCHQ to make sure this is being monitored, so nothing gets lost. So Mark, then. So before we kick off, how would you describe yourself in the web? Like, what's your role and position and whatnot?
Essentially, I'm a WordPress developer, mainly back-end development, but dabbling the bits and bobs. But yeah, just a WordPress developer, really. Building WordPress sites, plugins, themes, that sort of stuff.
Okay, and the company that you work for is one of your own devising, isn't it?
It is, yeah, Highrise Digital. I'm a co-founder.
Okay.
Along with my colleague Keith.
Cool. So could you tell us a little bit about how Highrise Digital came into being then?
Yeah, of course. So I went down to WordPress London meetup. I think it was in 2014-ish, and I did a talk there. And Keith, who I work with, Keith Evan, he was in the audience. And like you do at the end of the meeting, you go to the pub and you get chatting and so on. And Keith was on the lookout for like freelance developers to help him with the projects that he had on. And we started working together on projects. You know, Keith was using me as a freelance developer, building stuff for him. We started working on a number of projects, and that went really well. We worked together for a while on lots of different things, different types of projects. And things were obviously going quite well. So after that, must have been about 18 months into that, we decided that we'd probably want to form a company. I think we decided independently that would be a good idea. And right. Then obviously we decided that someone at some point mentioned it to each other. And then it was like, yeah, that's a really good idea. And then we sort of started from there in terms of developing our ideas and making sure that they were aligned, if you like, to make sure that we were going to be successful, hopefully. And that's sort of how we got to where we are at the moment, really. Started as a started working together outside of being a company, and then obviously came together after that.
Excellent. I think it's one of the good things that can happen at conferences, isn't it? We kind of speak to a lot of people who have kind of formed alliances and sort of work in partnerships this way. Where are you both based? Because you're not in the same location, are you?
We're not, no. Keith's based on the south coast in Folkestone in Kent, and I'm based in Lancashire, just near Preston, in a small town called Leyland. So we're pretty much at the opposite ends of the country.
Okay.
Which is good in some ways, but obviously it can pose some challenges in other ways. We've actually only physically seen each other, I think it's about five or six times now. But obviously that doesn't really pose a problem, and I think remote working is something that, you know, is I don't say difficult to get right. Obviously it has its challenges, and you need to sort of get over those hurdles, but once you do, obviously it can be quite beneficial. And so far it's been really good.
Excellent, good stuff. And good to see you're bridging the north-south divide as well.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to see. So how did you decide on a company name then?
Well, that was tricky. That was really tricky. One of the most tricky things to get right, obviously, because it's something you want to get right from the start. You don't want to have to change your name or that sort of thing. And we both sort of had some ideas, and it's not just like finding the name. Hmm. It's finding a name that's like available in terms of domain names and other things. So you can come up with all these brilliant names. And we actually had a list, you know, I think we had a Trello board set up where we were sort of like throwing ideas in about the company and what we wanted to do and stuff. And one of the ones was like, what we're going to call ourselves. and we had loads of ideas, and every time one was posted, oh yeah, that's really good, and then you look at the domain names and they're just all completely gone. And the annoying thing is that they're not actually being used. Yeah. They're just like been bought by someone and then they're just stuck there, but they want like ridiculous prices for them. So we had one that I came up with, which we both I kind of liked, and Keith was okay with it, and the domains were free, but we weren't like 100% on it, because obviously we wanted to be both, you know, fully on with it, rather than just one of us, and the other one was sort of like saying, well, okay, then we'll go along with that one. And so we were going to fall back on that one. And then we were on the tube in London, actually, and Keith just turned to me and said, well, we're both quite tall, I wonder if we can do something around that, really. And then he just sort of said High Rise Digital, and we both thought, nah, that'll be gone, you know, that's pretty common sort of name, would have thought. So I've got the phone out and did a little you know, search on the domains, and funnily enough, they were all available. So that was that, really. High Rise Digital was born, and the name was decided on.
Excellent. There's like a little bit of like serendipity involved sometimes, isn't it? Because when we were naming the Relative Paths podcast, we had another incarnation that we are never going to reveal. Yes. on pain of death. And we can, I think we kind of, did we get a domain name? Because I think we, did we do that or?
No, but I did do like a logo for it and spent quite a bit of time designing this pattern that would be associated with it.
Yeah, and I think we were both becoming increasingly more nauseous about the idea.
Yes.
Yeah. And then eventually, like, fortunately, we sort of poured out. But it can be a tricky process. You mentioned there are some other names that you chose, but the domains are taken and they were wanting ridiculous prices. Did you approach anybody to see about purchasing them, or did you just see how much they were up for sale and decided there was... what we're pursuing?
Yeah, we didn't approach anyone. We obviously, some of them were sort of like, I can't remember, what is it, like premium domains they call them?
Yeah.
And they're selling them for like ridiculous prices. And some of them you got to a landing page when you went to the domain, and obviously it had there this domain's for sale, and it was clearly like a private page. It wasn't like one of these parking pages that, you know, like sell them. So no, we never made any inquiries. Or did we make one, actually? I feel like we might have made one, and it was something ridiculous they wanted for it. But so we kind of gave up on that route and thought, well, no, we need to find one that's got these domains available. And we wanted to get, you know, because you can get like variants of domains.
Yes.
You know, so and we wanted to get one that was like the actual domain. So, you know, we're High Rise Digital, and actually we went for, although we've got like highrisedigital.com and so on, we wanted to be a bit more like new. So we went for the highrise.digital.
Okay.
Which is the new top level, well, one of the newish top level domains. And I think it was a bit of a stab in the dark, really. We were wondering how it would go, and it doesn't seem to have caused a problem. The only thing I can think it's a problem with is your email address. So it's like at highrise.digital, and some like sign up things when you're on the internet, they don't recognize it as an email.
Because
obviously
right?
And it's like, that's not a valid email. It's like, yes, it is. It's my email address. And funnily enough, the bank, it was one of them that didn't like it at all. And then they keep sending me an email saying, we don't have an email address for you, which is ridiculous. But yeah, that was the only real issue with having that top-level domain. But other than that, it's worked out quite well.
There's hundreds of thousands of developers racking their brains trying to work out how to do it with regular expressions, because it used to be quite simple. You know, if it's four characters long, it's got a dot in the middle. If it's three characters long, it's got a dot before it but not after it, and stuff like that, or something like that. You know, there was a set of rules, but now goodness knows,
you
just got to do some live DNS lookups to see if it exists before accepting
yeah, that's true. But most sites are okay with it. It's just some that are a bit more strict than others.
But back to tunes and names, it can be tricky if you're trying to get, particularly now, because you're trying to get social media sort of names as well. I think I might sort of link it in the show notes, but there's a service that I came across where you can send it a Twitter address or Twitter handle that you want, that somebody else has got, and it lets you know when it becomes available.
All right, cool.
Because I've been after Pixelsmiths for ages, and I think whoever has that hasn't tweeted for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And it's just frustrating. It's just like, it's there in a glass case and I can't get to it. But anyway, so we're talking about being going limited then. So when did you make the decision to do that?
I think when we formed the company, excuse me, we wanted to be a limited company. I think we both had that. You know, like I said, we had a Trello board that we wanted to put all the ideas in and things, and one of them was that we wanted to be a limited company. So we did that straight away. That was the first part of getting going, really. I think it was back in February where we formed the company. So yeah, that was both on our sort of list of we want this to be a limited company rather than what should we do type thing.
Right. So that was something that was baked in sort of right at the beginning. I mean, any particular reason why you took that approach? I mean, had you looked at other like business entities before then, or did you just both decide that being a limited company was the right step?
Yeah, well, there's three types, isn't there? There's like a sole trader, which is obviously what I was when I was freelancing. Mm-hmm. Then there's like a partnership backed business, which is not a limited company. And then there's obviously the limited company. There is some benefits and drawbacks to each one, I think. And obviously you need to do a bit of research as to which is the best for you. For us, it was sort of like the types of clients that we wanted to start working with. They sort of, well, we think they would sort of think better on working with a limited company than not. Mm-hmm. And that I think that's the case over experience, excuse me, as you've worked with more clients throughout. So they wanted, they'd be more likely to take on work from a limited company. The other thing that it does do is it sort of separates you as a person, so like myself and Keith, from the business as a legal entity. So the business is separate from you. So, for example, should the business ever go bankrupt, then you know you the business is that, not yourself. So it's a bit. So you like, for example, you I'm not a lawyer, so don't take this. But obviously, like your house wouldn't get like repossessed because the business is in trouble, type thing, and that sort of thing. But there are, as I said, there's drawbacks. It's more complex to actually run a limited company than it is a sole trader. You know, we have an accountant, and that's something we were both, again, wanted to get right from the start, someone that knew what they were doing.
Sure.
They knew how to do these sorts of things, and they'd run them before, and so on. So, you know, that's something, I don't think you have to have an accountant, but obviously it's helpful, and that's a monthly outlay as well, but it was certainly worth it from what we've had so far.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about an accountant is it should pay for itself, shouldn't it, have an account? I mean, have you found that to be sort of true? It has been worthwhile getting an account?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the stuff that you know, even just like logging things. I mean, we use FreeAgent, which is an accounting package. And even just like how to explain your transactions and things like that. I mean, FreeAgent are really good, the support, but having the accountant there just to ask questions to and things like that has been really beneficial. We've actually just made our first hire, so that process was obviously really new to us as well. And you know, the help that our accountant gave with that was really good, just knowing what to do.
Excellent. So, I mean, just on that then, so you've made your first hire. Is that, so what have you got? That's the worst way of asking that question. So,
yeah, it was a difficult process, actually, to be honest, finding the right person. So we've actually employed a junior developer.
Right.
Miss Gemma, she's just started on Monday, so she's only been with us a couple of days now, and you know, just as we're starting to grow, we're getting more and more projects, and we both sat down and said, you know, this is we can't actually cope with all this work really, so we need some help. And then we had the decision, you know, do we get freelancers in, which we'd done anyway, or is it now at the point where we need to grow and get bigger and hire someone? And there was lots of debate about, you know, what should we hire and so on, and should we hire someone like really, really junior that we can train up, or should we hire someone more senior and so on. And I think we've kind of like settled in the middle for that.
Right.
Because I think we were both quite keen on getting someone very junior and helping them to be, you know, train them up. But with remote working, that's quite hard because you're not actually sat next to them all the time to sort of, you know, help them along. And I'm sure we, you know, that's something we need to get better at and get things in place for future hires, hopefully.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, we're a three person team at the moment.
Oh, glad to hear it. So with being a limited company then, was there an extra layer of complexity to sort of incorporating somebody else into your business, or was it reasonably straightforward?
In terms of the new hire, you mean, sorry?
Yeah, yeah.
Reasonably straightforward. Again, the accountant is really valuable there because obviously they know how to get them on the payroll. They know how to sort of make sure that you're paying the right national insurance and tax for them, etc. And that's kind of the only complexity, really. There's other things that you need to think about as well, such as if you've got business insurance, you'll have to contact your business insurance and say, you know, we're now more than what we were, etc. And, you know, they need to know about that. But relatively straightforward. but yeah. probably because kind of someone else has done it for us in the accountant, which obviously, if you didn't have that, you'd have to sort of learn about all these things yourself.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you use FreeAgent. Does FreeAgent handle payroll as well?
It does, yeah. It handles great. Most things, yeah.
Because I use it, but I only use it as a sole trader, and I'm thinking of going limited. And I'm just, I understand that it handles limited without a problem.
Yeah, it handles limited companies. You change the type of account you have, and it handles payroll, it handles VAT, it handles all those sorts of things.
Good. Okay, thank you.
And it even like submits the VAT to HMRC.
Is that four times a year or something? Is that different?
Yeah, it's quarterly, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, actually, on that. So, I mean, you've mentioned some of the advantages. Actually, I just wanted to sort of go back to that. You were saying that a lot of companies prefer to deal with a limited company. Have you found that to be so across the board? Because in terms of like your clients, does it tend to be sort of large to medium size sort of projects, or are you dealing with like some of the, you know, the one man or one woman bands, like the sort of builders and plumbers and that sort of thing? Or do you tend to kind of go for sort of more SME type clients?
Yeah, we are, really, to be honest. We're trying to move away from the smaller clients and move up to more bigger projects, which I think is where being a limited company sort of can help with that. I must admit, this is just my sort of guess at it and what experience we've had. It might not actually be the case. I mean, some companies have openly told us that, you know, they do like freelancers and that's why they use, you know, they'd rather use them. But the majority of companies that you send to get larger companies, they tend to be more comfortable, I think, with a limited company. Why, I'm not sure. Perhaps, you know, perhaps you're going to stick around a bit more, maybe, I don't know. But so yeah, we tend to pitch in for projects that are a little bit larger than, like you said, your average sort of, you know, builder, plumber, that sort of small brochure sites. We're looking at projects that are lasting sort of like 8, 9, 10 weeks or more, and that sort of size.
Yeah, I found that myself just recently, because I think I just said I'm a sole trader, and I don't go for a particular size client, but I probably end up with quite small clients. But through a colleague, an old colleague, I've just got some work with a bank over in Germany. And the first conversation we had about it was, they said, okay, you know, what's your VAT number and your company registration number, and we'll just get you added onto the books. And I had to say, right, I'm not a registered company and I'm not VAT registered either. So I thought that was going to be a problem, because everyone else that's working for this company are. I don't think it's a requirement. It's just that I'm a bit of an oddity for them. So it's gone through okay. And I've just sent them an invoice yesterday, actually. It hasn't been paid yet, but, but I mean, I'm not expecting that, but that quick. But it did seem a bit strange.
Hmm.
And also, so I can't, you know, properly charge them that. It was just a flat line item invoice. I don't know whether that causes them a problem. Also, I don't know if it's added confusion because they're in Germany. But anyway, I'm not an accountant. Yeah. They are. They've got one. So,
did you have to invest them in chocolate coins then? Yeah. Won't pay you real money.
Yeah, a truck will turn up with a.
Yeah, it gets complicated when you like selling to sort of like Europe and the rest of the world as well, obviously, because there's like, you know, do I charge VAT for them? Do I not charge VAT?
Well, like the VAT Moss type thing, or is that?
Yeah. Well, we've got that as well, because we do sell some plugins. So,
that's interesting.
Okay,
which has been an interesting concept. Yeah, to look at what gets charged VAT Moss and what doesn't, and so on. So, it has thrown another level of complexity over it, really. And I still need to do some work on our actual store to make sure it's. Well, not compliable is the wrong word, but make sure it's easier for us to work out what's VAT Moss and what isn't.
Sure. Have you heard much of what Rachel Andrew has been talking about with VAT Moss?
Briefly, yeah. But no, I've not followed it as much as I should, to be honest. But times have been of the essence.
Of course, yeah. She seems to be the go-to person. It's quite interesting listening to her speaking on a podcast a little while ago about VAT Moss, and apparently it's a problem for people selling knitting patterns. A lot of people sell digital knitting patterns to Europe, and and of course they've been stung with it. So she said that like she's formed a bit of an odd alliance with like the knitting pattern community. Because I think it affects, you know, not just people like us who are sort of in the, you know, solidly in the tech world. I guess anybody who sells something digitally is going to be affected by that. But it'd be interesting to see how things sort of shake down with that in the future, sort of bearing in mind sort of the what's going down. But anyway, so you mentioned then that going limited does come with a certain amount of complexity. So could you run through the kind of things that you have to do as a limited company that you wouldn't have to do as a sole trader or as a partnership?
Yeah, so the first thing you have to do is obviously incorporate your company, which these days is essentially doing it online.
Yeah.
It's not particularly complex. You just to fill in some details, you know, who the directors of the company are, what number of shares they're going to have, etc. like that. And I think it's about £15 you have to pay.
Yeah.
And what that essentially does is it registers you with Companies House, and then about a day later you get a certificate back saying, you know, High Rise Digital Limited is born, if you like, and you get this certificate of incorporation. And that's kind of the first thing that's different to when you're just either a sole trader, and that's what you have to do. You have to obviously get a bank account is the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be obviously a business bank account because you're a limited company. So previously I just had a separate current account which I use for my sort of sole trading work. But obviously it has to be a specific business bank account, which for us in the first year doesn't cost anything, but obviously there will be a little cost after the first year. And it depends which bank you use as to what they'll offer you, obviously.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've got a business account with Santander and they don't charge me for that, but there's a limited, you don't get any counter service with Santander, yeah. So you have to do everything online. So
And I went into the counter a while ago just to ask a question. I had some cash. Someone had insisted in paying me in cash. So I went to the counter. I said, I know this is a business account, but I've just got a question. If I pay that in, does it go in straight away, or does there's like a 3 or 4 days effectively get on a post lorry up to the... And she said, look, we're not supposed to, but we can actually process funds for you over the counter, but we're not supposed to. So that's interesting to know in an emergency.
It is, yeah. I mean, we're with
Barclays. For a Santander user, that is.
our account has restrictions in that way. So what they do, I think, that our bank is they sort of say, we'll look at your transactions in the first year, and then because it's free, and then we'll decide which is the best package for you to go on based on what those transactions are. So are you using cash, are you using checks, are you using online payments? And obviously all those are just online payments, so we'll get the online account, whatever the equivalent is. And then so if they're free to transact, it's only then when you want to use cash or checks that you get charged, I think.
Got you. So right. It's a charge like per, it's not like a flat rate, it's a charge like per, if you, almost like a charge per check or charge per sort of,
I'm not sure. I'd have to check. I think there is a monthly fee after the first year, but I think then there might be a charge per transaction for cash and checks. I'm not sure, but there's something like that, yeah.
Okay. But just to say to our listeners, it's worth kind of checking different things out, because I think each bank will have a slightly different package.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Some are better than others. I mean, again, Santander has been good because it's free, but they've not been great in some other areas.
Yes.
So it kind of, so, you know, the level of service, the amount you pay varies from sort of bank to bank, so it's always worth sort of going in and sort of comparing a few and seeing what sort of deal you can get. Okay, so what other things do you need to be aware of then as a limited company?
Obviously, you need to keep your books, which I guess you kind of do when you're a sole trader. Obviously, if you're taking someone on like we've just done, then that gets a bit more complicated. And I would recommend using one of the online services. We use Free Agent. I'm sure there's loads of them out there that you could use. And also, pick one that your accountant is comfortable using, because they essentially will have to use it as well. Which, I mean, our accountant was great, so she'd used it before, and you know, she was quite comfortable with using it. We were keen on using it because Keith had used it previously and he knew how to use it. I hadn't, but now I've used it, it's great. So that's something that you will need to do and get used to. I mean, you could do it all manually, but I'd highly recommend not to, because it means like our accountant can log in, we can log in, etc. Just makes it really easy. So that's something you'll obviously need to do. And then obviously you've got other things to decide, like how much you're going to pay each other, what the salaries are going to be, you know, that sort of stuff. So it is a bit more complicated. There's VAT as well. I mean, I say there's VAT. There's VAT if you're not limited and your turnover is over a certain amount, to which I can't remember, but it's about 80,000, I think. You have to pay VAT anyway, so that's kind of not specific to limited companies. But it may be when you go limited, hopefully you're going to be more successful, and therefore you're probably going to have to be VAT registered. And then you've got to do those VAT returns as well and track, you know, charge VAT and pay it back as well.
Yeah, because do you have to submit returns quarterly anyway as a limited company, or is it just the VAT returns that you need to return?
It is just off the top of my head, it's just the VAT returns that is quarterly, I believe. And then we've also got like the VAT MOS to do as well, which kind of we do it in the same way as the VAT, so it's done at the same time. So they're both at the same time. But I don't think the company accounts are done every quarter. They're done at the end of every year, I think.
Sure. And just again, as a PSA to our listeners, remember that neither of us, none of us are accountants or lawyers. So don't run out and do exactly what we say and then sue us. But, you know, it's, again, it's a thing to bear in mind that as a limited company, there are extra things that you need to take care of. So yeah. it's you know, you need to do your due diligence and speak to an accountant, somebody who really knows what they're talking about, because it takes a big weight off your mind. Because even as a sole trader or a partnership, if you come to your returns and you don't know what you're doing, it can be a bit of a panic. In the years past, I'd always be like stressing out middle of January, sort of trying to get everything done.
Do you know what? I have to say, since using Free Agent, I press a button.
Yeah.
And it's done.
Yeah.
I cannot recommend it highly enough. I used to sit with like the tax jacket from Black Books. I used to sit surrounded by my paperwork, every device I could, with different emails open, trying to work out, tracing payments, thinking that something came into my account. I know it was a job, but what was it? Who was it from? Now it's done.
Getting organized is obviously the key, isn't it?
It's amazing.
And I would say as well, even though obviously, you know, I would really recommend you get an accountant, I do think it is important that you understand how things work.
Yes,
you don't have to understand them to the level of the accountant and know all the ins and outs and everything, but to understand how exactly, you know, what you're paying, how's it worked out, I think that's actually important. Because at the end of the day, the responsibility is you. It's not your accountant. So if you don't fill in something correctly, it is actually your responsibility. You take you're held to account, not the accountant. So although you want to pass, you know, the bulk of the stuff to them, it is important to know what's going on and how things work.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's also important that you get an accountant that you can trust as well. Not that, not that kind of anybody is particularly trustworthy or untrustworthy. I think it's just for your own peace of mind. If you know that you're with somebody who's like absolutely got your best interests at heart and is going to...
Absolutely. And I'd recommend actually physically seeing the accountant before you go with them. I mean, it's my sort of role is to do the sort of accounting and stuff in the business. And I spoke to about three people. And it was absolutely obvious after speaking to the three which one was going to be the best one.
Oh, excellent.
And I think without doing that, I maybe wouldn't have got that knowledge, if you know what I mean.
Okay, good stuff. Okay, so almost getting towards the conclusion then. Would you say being a limited company has improved the way that you and Keith are working? You and Keith and Gemma, sorry, are working?
Yes, I suppose it has. But then I suppose it's difficult to compare as we weren't actually working together, as in a partnership before. We were working separately but doing projects together. But yeah, definitely. I mean, everything's just like you say, using stuff like Free Agent, everything's just sort of like, I don't know what the right word is, it's organized and you know, that sort of thing. And actually now we've taken on obviously Gemma and another employee, it kind of forces you to get things in place, so that you know you can get other people to do things in the business the way that the business should be done. So even just things like, you know, how to set up projects and that sort of thing, as well as sort of the admin side of it as well. So we've spent quite a lot of time in the last month, which, you know, getting that sort of thing set up and ready so that someone can just come in and get cracking with projects as best they can.
So you feel like it's the whole thing has helped you just be more organized and a bit
definitely,
more
deliberate
about things.
So, rather than when you're a sole trader, you know, it's you're on your own, if you will, so anything you do is just going to affect you. Whereas when you're with a, and I guess the same with a partnership as well as being limited, but obviously things that you do are going to affect everyone else working in the company, so you need to make sure that they're done right.
Yeah, absolutely. So would you say it's made you more profitable then as a business?
The evidence suggests so, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
You know, so we're doing quite well. We've been able to take someone on. So again, not having anything to compare it to before in terms of working as a business together, it's probably, you know, I can't really say for sure, but yeah, I mean, we've, you know, fingers crossed we're doing really well. You know, we've been able to take someone on and hopefully that will continue. So yeah.
Excellent. So going limited then, or at least seriously thinking about it, would that be something that you would recommend then to other developers and designers?
I think so, but obviously it's not right for everybody.
Sure.
I think if I was continuing? Well, I don't know, actually. If I was continuing to be a sole as a freelancer on my own, would I have continued being a sole trader? Probably yes, but probably there would have been a point where I've had to say, no, this is probably going to be better off for me financially to go into as a limited company anywhere.
Yeah, sure. And it's worth, again, sort of reiterating the sort of the legal protection that it can give you. I guess even as a freelancer, if you're kind of moving up to larger clients, you know, you do your best sort of to make sure that you're covered in terms of your, like, the agreement that you sort of get your clients to sign and things like that, which does afford a bit of protection. But I think, again, being a limited company will give you, I think, a bit of extra peace of mind, do you think?
I think so, yeah. And I think maybe actually that's why larger companies want to work with limited companies, for that same reason, in a way. Maybe not, but that's just my opinion, really. But yeah, I think that's a good reason.
Okay, excellent. Okay, thanks for that. So again, to our listeners, we're just sort of trying to cover, you know, probe a little bit under the surface with this. But again, if you're seriously considering doing it, it's worth taking some advice. So you mentioned that you spoke to an accountant. Were there any other like good sources of information that you went to or that you could recommend for finding out what you need to do?
I think the government website, gov.uk, is actually very good. It's very clearly laid out in terms of setting up a limited company, you know, taking on employees, doing all that sort of stuff. And it's been revamped, hasn't it, over the last few years. And it is very good. It's very readable. It's not too complicated. I mean, it is complicated because it is complicated, but it's quite well laid out, and it's good. You know, it's a good read. You come away thinking, yeah, I do know a bit more about that now. So certainly that's a good resource as well to go to.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, that's one of the places that I went to for advice on this sort of things. And I remember looking at it years ago and then just kind of
crying,
waking up in a pool of tears like an hour later, just wondering what's going on. But now it does seem to be a lot easier to use.
It's just the setup of it. I think previously you used to have to, you'd be reading something and then it'd refer to something else and then you click there.
Yeah.
And then you'd read that and it'd refer to something else and then you click there and you think, well, what was the reading to start with? You know,
yeah.
It's just like a big maze of links. Whereas now they seem to have set it out in a bit more of a readable way where you can get the information better. It's probably the same information, but just displayed differently and therefore it's much easier to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's pretty much our take on Going Limited. Anything you wanted to add, Ben, before we wrapped up?
Nope. I'm just thinking I might just trust you two and go and register this afternoon.
Because I've got a limited company that I set up. When I initially did it, it was partially because I wanted to capture the name. Because that's the thing, when you go into Companies House, names are registered. So that's another thing to consider, along with getting the domain name. You actually have to sort of make sure that the business name is free.
Yeah, good point.
And just do it as soon as you think of it, because I had a client come to me a little while ago who had a business name that he'd chosen months ago that he'd really got attached to and loved. And I was sort of, I sat opposite him as we were kind of typed it into hover.com to see if it was available, and it wasn't. And sort of we had a look on Google, and it was a very, very popular search term. Lots of other businesses had sort of, you know, got, like, basically every variant of the domain name was taken. So it was kind of a bit sad, like, seeing that name being snatched away from him. So as soon as you think of something, like you mentioned, you and Keith did on the underground, you search for it right away just to make sure that it's there. So do that. But I've got a limited company that's dormant at the moment, so I'm just kind of waiting for the right circumstances to unleash it on the unsuspecting world. But yeah, it's certainly something I think that as we'd recommend that you at least think about it and look at it, because, you know, you might find that it works for you. So, okay, I think that's Going Limited.
So that brings us to our Tool Star section. And Mark, guest Mark, you've got one for us, haven't you?
I have, yeah. So at Highrise Digital, we do a lot of sort of, well, I say a lot. We do some ongoing work for clients. So rather than like building a site, we're doing sort of development of a longer term thing. And we believe that communicating with the client is absolutely key, you know, to keeping them on track about what's going on, how the project's going, etc. So the one of the ways in which we do that, apart from the obvious, you know, Trello, email, Slack, and all that sort of stuff, is we tend to do little screencasts about what we've done, what we've developed, how things work, etc. And one of the tools we found really good for that is a little app for the Mac. I'm not sure if there's one on Windows, but and it's called QuickCast. So you just download it, and then it's a bit like using QuickTime to do a screen recording. So you just sort of click New Screen Recording, you tell it which screen you want to record, what microphone you want to use, and so forth. And obviously press go, and it'll record your screen while you're chatting away, you know, telling the client about the updates you've got and stuff. But then one of the other benefits to it, obviously, than using QuickTime, is that you can then just publish that online straight away, and it gives you like a little short URL that you can share with your client, and the video is like all encoded for you, a bit like uploading it to YouTube, I guess, but it just all happens in one go. And the other good thing is it's like limited to 5 minutes, so you've kind of got to do quick, short points rather than having to, you know, go on and on and on for 20 minutes and then the client gets bored. So it forces you to sort of do short, sharp updates quite regularly. So we've found it really useful for sharing sort of progress with clients. It's been really good.
That's a really good little app, but that's also a really interesting concept, screencasting to clients to update them. I like that. Are you literally recording your screen whilst you show them and speak over it, showing them new features, would the WordPress backend or things like that? Is that what you're doing?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it could be backend and frontend. So, you know, we've got some clients that are on sort of longer term, you know, retainers and things, and they want work doing all the time. So, you know, we might have a Trello board, and they'll put the tasks they want us to do on there. And we just find the easiest way of explaining something of how something works, if you've developed a specific feature for them, is actually just to show them. And the best way of doing that is a screencast, where you can just talk through what you've done, why you've done it. You know, if I put this here, where does it show on the front end? How do I get this to work? You know, maybe it's like, you know, I have to add this gallery or slider or whatever it might be. And it's just a really easy way of getting that progress across to the client, rather than having to type out an email that's, you know, 3 pages long and then they don't get it anyway. So,
yeah.
But it works really well. And the feedback I've had from clients has been really good. They've, you know, they've liked watching them and the fact that they're short and sharp, you know, they get to the point.
That's brilliant. Because I had a client recently who wanted me to write them a manual for how to use the WordPress backend. And at first I thought, oh goodness. I pointed them to a lot of the existing documentation, and some of it is really quite good and some of it's not great. So most of it's pretty good, but they wanted to know how to use their particular special features, you know, because I'd added in bits and bobs, a custom plugin and quite a lot of customization of the theme. You know, the kind of bits and bobs you add that aren't going to be in the WordPress docs. So after they got this document, they then wanted me to go up and actually show them. And I had to go up and sit next to them for a day, pretty much just doing a handover. And that would have been such a good way of doing it. Doing a cut down version of the document, but with links to screencasts. I think that would have... I'm going to do that. Thank you. Brilliant idea.
Yeah. One of the things. All right. No problem.
Yeah. It was interesting. I was listening to, I think it's an episode of the Control Click Cast podcast a while ago, and somebody on there was talking about their blog and trying to almost turn it into a wiki for their customers. Because I guess if somebody's asking you for a manual for WordPress, if you've got to show this customer, you might have to show the next 20 customers the same thing. Yeah. So what this organization were doing, they were just writing blog posts. And whenever a customer asked or client asked, they said, yep, have a look at this blog post, which was quite...
But also leaving the information online ready for everyone else therefore so building kind of the brand and their name and everything. Brilliant.
Did you find, Mark, that you ever reuse content or reuse videos for different clients, or do you tend to just record them specifically for each individual like instance?
I tend to do it specifically for each individual. And I think when I'm recording the video as well, I make that sort of personal to that client, you know. So, you know, start off with, you know, hi, it's Mark from High Rise, and, you know, I'm talking to them as a person. I'm actually almost, you know, like on the phone to them, talking to them. I think that's nicer as well. And actually a lot of the stuff we do display on those videos is really custom to that client as well, so it's not something more specific. And some of the clients we do work with have used WordPress for a long time, so some of the stuff, the core stuff in the back end, they kind of know that anyway, and it's just what we've developed and how to do that and how to use it. That makes it interesting and better for them. But the good thing with QuickCast as well is it kind of gives you that you can keep the history of all the links you've created. So what I've done in the past is, you know, a client said to me, oh, can you just remind me how to do this? And it's like, oh, I'll just go and find that video that we did excellent. For them last week and then just send them the link again. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I remember you doing that now. Yeah, I'll watch it again, type thing. So that can be really handy as well.
That's really good, because there are one or two occasions where you might have to remind somebody how to do something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A few times.
Or if someone else in the business comes in to do the same job and you've given the video to person X and person Y is now doing it, then you can just pass them the link to that video and they can watch it.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, that's a really good thing. I'm not sure. So it's a Mac only.
I think the one we use is it's quickcast.io is the website, and I think it is Mac only. I think it is. I'm sure there's a Windows alternative. I'm sure
there's probably a Windows alternative which involves kind of getting like one of those old timey cameras and having somebody having to put a hood over their head and hold a flash gun. Just do 100 of those. but I'll have a look actually and see if there's a Windows alternative and link it in the show notes. Well, maybe. But anyway.
I mean, yeah. I mean, even on Windows, you can obviously do screencasts on Windows without any apps. I'm sure. So, but obviously, you'd have to then, you know, you lose some of the benefits of that app. But I'm sure that you can still do screencasts and do the same sort of thing about updating clients, but
yeah,
might be a bit different.
I think I use a plugin called Nimbus, which just does some basic I think it's a Chrome plugin which does some sort of screenshots, and you can record like a video in medium quality.
Have you used LiceCap?
No, I haven't.
It's a little GIF. It records a little section of your screen. It's ever so simple, and it's a open source freeware, I think. And it records out GIFs, so it's perfect for capturing little sections of video for a tiny little GIF or something, or just anything that you want to do. It's very, very, very simple, but it does lack features because it's supposed to be incredibly simple. Yeah,
that sort of thing can also be useful for forums as well. If you're posting a problem on a forum,
yes,
putting a little GIF of what's going on can be invaluable as well. So that's our tool star for today. What was the name of it again?
It's Quickcast.
Quickcast.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So this is our jukebox section. This is a bit of an interlude jukebox section because we're recording this after we've recorded the episode, even though this is still us recording the episode. What we mean is Mark's gone, and we're recording this after. Am I making any sense?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's fine.
Because we're gonna do this, and then we're gonna come back to the actual wrap up for the episode. So, clear as mud. Jukebox. Do you want to go first?
Okay. What are they called? I have, you know me, and problems with pronouncing names.
Yes.
I've just listened to this band's name. We've had them before. I think in the previous one I called them Modrat, but. They say it like Modrat or something.
It's difficult in those situations to know whether you do the anglicised version.
I don't think I was just racist.
No.
Good, because someone told me, someone not too far away from me told me that accents are racist. Once.
It wasn't me, was it? Yeah. Was it me?
Yeah. I think I did a West Indian accent and you were like, oi.
It's a tricky one. Some of them, I think we need some sort of accent licensing body where you can go in and demonstrate the accents and then they can approve you for certain
certify
ones.
You.
Yeah. So if like you do, because I was born in Wales, so I can do a Welsh accent.
Go on then.
I can't do it, but I could do it if I was allowed.
It's like me telling jokes about epilepsy because I had it when I was a kid.
I feel like I can. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And I can do, because my mum's from Guyana, so I guess I can do West Indian accents.
Go on then.
I don't want to. I haven't done it for a long time.
Okay.
So I don't know, but we'll try and set something up as a startup.
Right.
Accents.io.
Yes. Good.
Politically acceptable accents.io.
So. Modrat,
yes.
That's what I'm going to call them. April this year, April Fool's Day, they released, I'm guessing it's their third album, because it's called Three, but in like Roman numerals, full of great stuff. But I want to stick something on our original jukebox, you know, our sort of like no lyrics, must be able to work to type thing. And nicely, they also released the album number three, instrumental version, with instrumentals of every single one. And I shall just lean across to Safari, which I'm using because the Spotify online player now tells me I need Flash installed to play it. I guess it's always had it, but I think the latest versions of Chrome have stripped Flash out. as of 51 or 2 or something. Okay. And I've just had to install it, but I don't really want Flash, so I've installed it in a browser I never use, which is Safari. This is complicated.
Yeah.
The track is called Eating Hooks, and it's, as I've already said, the instrumental version, and it starts off really ambient, and then very slow, sort of like about 120 BPM, big, deep bass kicks in, but very simple stripped-back drums, and goes through with a big ambient underpinnings and platter below it. Absolutely up my street sort of thing. You had a little listen, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, absolutely up my street as well.
Yeah. So here's a bit of that. I don't know whether to play an ambient bit or a drummy bit. We'll see in the edit. Okay, so that is mine.
So we'll have to wait until this episode is out. Well, it is out now, as you're listening to it, to know whether it's been an ambient or drummy bit.
You with your temporal weirdness.
I know. We are like the Doctor Who of the internet. So mine, you had a listen to this as well, didn't you? This is somebody that I came across on YouTube. I think it was... there's a site called VideoSniff that is like, it's like YouTube, but with slightly better manners. This site appeared in like the top 15 videos of the week. This video, I mean. And it's called Try the Bass by Roland Jenkes. And he's a bit of a cult phenomenon on the web for people that are into this kind of like keyboard, sort of quite high tempo EDM type music. And you've kind of got to see him play it to really appreciate it, because he's an interesting looking guy, so endearing, immediately endearing, but like if you see him play, it's amazing to see him play. And yeah, the music's good. It's like, I don't know, this might be a little bit polarizing because it's a little bit too much coffee and sherbet and sugar, and
I think it's like someone took Daft Punk. So, there's got to be a tribute band out there somewhere called Daft Punk.
Daft Punk.
As a bass, and they threw in some like chiptune artists like Pixel Hate, and then some Binar Pilot, stuff like that. Some of this kind of Norwegian video game music type background.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like mashed all that together, pumped it full of caffeine, maybe some illegal drugs. And then recorded. You just played me that, and you're right, endearing. You want him to succeed.
You do. It reminded me a little bit of the track that Ben Brignall had when he came on, like a similar sort of feel. But I just think he's brilliant. So have a listen. You might want to sit down if you're driving. You might want to pull over into a lay-by, and just here we go.
So which playlist do you put in that on?
What do you reckon?
I don't think it's got any lyrics, has it?
It hasn't.
But I don't know if I'd be able to work to it.
No, me neither. But I'm not sure if it fits into the where we're going with the alt playlist. So should we put it on the regular one and then see how it...
Yeah, see if it gets voted off. <We'll> see, yeah. Okay.
We'll see if Spotify goes bust. In the next 48 hours, we'll know.
Yeah, they might if they continue forcing people to use Flash Player.
Yeah, they might. It's a bit retro, isn't it?
I might actually have to download the application.
We had a little brief chat about whether apps are the death of the web, and I think, bearing in mind our consternation at having to
they are not.
Download an app instead of, you know, playing Spotify on the web, I'm guessing for us, certainly not. But we might do an episode on that in the future, maybe.
Let's.
Okay, but anyway, that's our jukebox. So as we mentioned, this is an interlude type jukebox. So we're going to go back to us wrapping up the episode now. Okay, so that's been our discussion about going limited. So thanks for joining us, Mark. You've helped shed a lot of light on that. So if people wanted to follow you on social media or what have you, how would they do that?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. I'm WP Mark on Twitter. We're also, the High-Rise Digital are also on Twitter. We're at the High-Rise Team, which was the only Twitter handle that we could find that was any good, which is linking into our early discussion. And we are highrise.digital. I also have a blog, but I've tended to stop posting on there now we've formed the company, and that's at markwilkinson.me. So yeah, you can follow me on those things.
Excellent, thank you. And we'll pop all those links in the show notes. So as ever, this show will be going out on SoundCloud, but we'll be putting it up on our website and our website. So I went Scooby-Doo there for a minute. Putting it up on our website, relativepaths.uk. We are also Relative Paths on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. If you like the episode, then go to your pod platform of choice and give us a good review, because that helps people find the show. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back in your ears in 2 weeks' time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Website.